Welcome to the Aging Well podcast. I'm Jeff Armstrong, here with Corbin Bruton. In this and the episodes that follow, we will share candid discussions on aging and hear from the experts. We are here to inform and encourage as we experience, well, aging. This is a special episode of the Aging Well podcast. In this episode, it's me who is being interviewed. I am joined by one of my exercise science students from Western Oregon University, Noah Schnell. We discuss the power of social connectedness for aging well. Noah, welcome to the Aging Well podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's begin by having you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Shouldn't I be asking you to do that?
Well, this is a different situation today. I'm being interviewed, so.
Well, I am a senior here at Western Oregon. I've been in the exercise science program for all 4 years, and I'm about ready to be done. And this is one of my last big hoorahs before I'm done, and something I wanted to be leaving my mark on the exercise science program here at Western.
Well, you're definitely leaving your mark. So Noah, tell me, why social connectedness?
Well, you know, being an exercise science student, I really wanted to take a step back and look at what we could do to help improve life quality. You know, that doesn't have to do with taking a pill and sitting on the couch and just hoping everything fixes itself. I'm also a very socially active person, and I wanted to explore the benefits of how that might impact me later in life if I continue my same habits.
Should say when you continue your same habits, if they're good, healthy habits. I love it, though. Social connectedness is a very important part of aging well.
You know, with this modern era of humanity, life expectancy has raised drastically. However, around 14% of adults age 60 and over live with some sort of mental disorder, you know, and that can range from disorders that are similarly prevalent in other populations, like anxiety and depression, to things that are more prevalent in the aging populations, like Alzheimer's and other types of dementia.
So what is social connection?
So I like to think of a social connection, including many different things. At the base level, a social connection is any sort of regular social contact with another person. Feeling connected socially is when you feel like you belong and have the support or care that you need from either a singular person or a group of people. The quality, diversity, and number of connections also plays a part, and it's something that really needs to be thought about as well.
So it isn't just about being around people, it's about deep interpersonal relationships.
Yeah, and having high quality social relationships can help increase life expectancy and drastically increase someone's quality of life. I'm sure even yourself have felt somewhat isolated or lonely at some times, you know, that you just really don't have anyone to talk to or share something that you're proud of.
I suppose. Yeah, sometimes I do feel that way. I have been blessed to have close, albeit small, circle of friends. Very close friends. I have my wife, and when my parents were alive, I tried to call them weekly. Nevertheless, there are situations when I feel isolated and alone. It helps to be a professor interacting with students regularly, though.
Well, you're not alone. About half of individuals age 60 and over are at risk of social isolation, and about one third of those will experience some degree of loneliness later in life. But this is not a permanent problem. There are more and more interventions and community groups help combat this feeling directed toward our older adult population.
So studies have shown that older adults with strong social connections tend to experience better mental health outcomes, including lower rates of depression and anxiety. Having a supportive social group can provide a sense of belonging and purpose, which are crucial for maintaining emotional well-being.
Exactly. You know, my research that I've done is mainly on the mental side, but I know you're an expert of the physical activity side of things. So what do you think some of the benefits of social connections are on physical health?
Well, first, I use that term expert very, very loosely. But the physical health benefits of social connections include longer lifespan, improved immune function, lower blood pressure, better heart health, faster recovery from illness or surgery, improved mental health, better pain tolerance,
and overall just better health choices. Overall, fostering strong social connections can have a profound effect on physical health, promoting longevity, resilience, and overall well-being.
So it sounds like there is plenty of different ways why having strong social connections can improve physical health. Well, me and my parents stay pretty socially active, but some of my friends' parents aren't the best with that. Is there anything they could do now regarding their social activeness to help their physical health for the future?
You know, from my courses, that the best things that we can do to promote health and mitigate risk of illness are exercise and physical activity, eat a healthy diet, maintain a healthy body composition, have good sleep hygiene, and
don't smoke.
And don't smoke. As we've discussed, older adults who maintain strong social ties often have better cardiovascular health, immune function, and overall longevity. So social support can buffer the effects of stress and promote healthier lifestyle behaviors, such as regular exercise and better sleep patterns. And so how do we tie social connectedness to these? Group exercise is one area. I think walking with our partner or friend, joining social groups, family dinner. My wife and I do a family or do a 15-minute check-in. I've talked about that a few times on the podcast. We instigated a few years ago that we just every night have to sit down, maybe have a glass of wine or a beer, and just sit down, share our day. Kids often kind of climb in and join in on it. And, you know, they usually tell us, you know, it's supposed to be 15 minutes, but it always turns out to be 45. So that's one of the things that we can do. There's a lot of things that we can do just simply to connect ourselves. And in the process of connecting socially, do things that are going to benefit our health.
Yeah. So it sounds like there's a place where people can start. They don't have to just think about, there's too many different ways that I could go about this, and it's kind of overwhelming. You can just start with a simple 15-minute conversation with somebody throughout the end of your night.
Yeah, just baby steps. Pick one little thing you can do every day just to begin to increase that social connectedness, even if it's just calling a friend. Or, you know, as much as we hate to talk about social media and all the ills of it, there are a lot of benefits to simply just connecting through social media if we don't have anybody close by.
Yeah. And especially from my side of it, before my grandma passed away, I would message her daily on Facebook, and it was a great way to keep her checked in with me and me checked in with her. And she would love to see pictures of what I was doing. And I feel like I have to do some sort of thing to keep people connected with me just because it's who I am.
It is who you are. I know you very well. You are very social.
So I'm also aware that there's many older adults who face a lot of unique challenges in maintaining their specific connections. What do you think some of the challenges are in social connections for someone who's older?
Well, there are several life course factors that may affect the relationship between age and social connectedness among older adults. These are things like retirement, and you know, people leave their jobs, are now suddenly distanced from the people that they have spent the most time with over the last 20, 30 years in many cases, maybe even longer. There's bereavement. You lose a spouse, you lose friends. That makes it a bit more challenging. Some of those tight social connectedness, the older we get, the more we start losing them on an almost annual basis. And other health problems that might kind of disconnect us. Other things that might affect social connectedness are things like hearing loss, mobility issues, impaired immune function. Remember COVID? All the seniors that had to be separated, they could only visit their family through like the glass doors at the senior centers. And that was really tough on a lot of older adults. And I think that was a critical to many of the deaths that we might have seen in the older population during COVID. And families are increasingly spread out across the country. I mean, my family's in got countless states. I think every one of us kids is in a different state. My wife's siblings are all in different states. My parents have both passed, but my mother-in-law is in Florida. My stepmother's in Arizona. Everybody's all over. And so these are just a few of the things that really affect our social connectedness as we age.
Didn't really think about some of those. They really didn't cross my mind when I was thinking about this.
Yeah. So while social connections are indeed vital for healthy aging, older adults often encounter obstacles that can hinder them from their ability to stay socially engaged. As I mentioned, one common challenge is retirement, which can disrupt those established social networks and routines. That can lead people to having greater feelings of isolation and loneliness. We just recently interviewed Sarah Carbonell in episode 140 about reimagining senior living around social interactions. And Amblebrook is a great example of how 55 plus communities can facilitate social connectedness. I also favor continuous care retirement communities. I see quite a lot of difference between the community my mother was in when her husband passed and she later died versus the communities my stepmother was in, still lives in when my dad died and my mother-in-law lives in. My dad passed unexpectedly and the community has just rallied around Margaret. And my father-in-law passed through memory care and hospice, and my mother-in-law continues to live in a very well-connected community.
Yeah, it's understandable. I can see how mobility limitations can really pose significant barriers to social interaction for our aging population.
Precisely. Mobility issues, whether due to age-related declines in physical health or limitations in transportation options, can also restrict older adults' ability to participate in social activities and maintain regular contact with family and friends.
So these older adults are feeling isolated due to circumstances beyond their control. Are there any other challenges that older adults commonly face in staying socially connected?
Certainly. The loss of loved ones, as I mentioned, whether it's through death or relocation, can also profoundly impact an older adult's social network and lead to feelings of loneliness and grief. Additionally, societal attitudes towards aging can also sometimes contribute to ageism and social exclusion, kind of further exacerbating feelings of isolation among older adults.
It really sucks to hear that we're still dealing with ageism in 2024.
Yeah.
You know, these challenges are undoubtedly daunting, but I'm sure there are solutions and strategies available to help older adults overcome them. Could you maybe share some examples of how older adults can maintain social connections despite all of the obstacles they have to face?
Absolutely. There are numerous initiatives and resources available to support older adults in staying socially engaged. Community organizations and senior centers often offer a variety of programs and activities specifically designed to foster social connections and combat isolation. Volunteering can also be a meaningful way for older adults to connect with others while giving back to their communities.
You know, now that you mentioned volunteering, I realize that for the activities that I volunteer for, there are definitely people who are retired or older that I work with, you know, and they're usually some of the best people to be around. Every year I help out with the Oregon Trail Rally for car racing up in Portland and in Southern Washington. And most of the people that I work with, now that I think about it, are older people. And, you know, they're always the most fun, the most cheerful. They're the first people there. They're the hardest workers. And they're just the best people to be around. However, I'm also curious about the role of technology in facilitating social connections for older adults. You know, how can technology bridge the gap for older adults who may face mobility or transportation challenges?
Besides Tinder?
Besides Tinder.
Well, technology can indeed be a game changer for older adults, providing avenues for virtual social interaction and connection. My generation has all but hijacked Facebook. Video calling apps, you know, can connect grandparents with their grandchildren. Social media platforms, countless online communities enable older adults to stay connected with loved ones and engage in social activities from the comfort of their own homes. However, it is essential to address digital literacy barriers and ensure that older adults have access to the necessary resources and support to fully utilize these technologies.
I know there are some classes at one of our local community colleges that teach digital literacy. I'm not sure if they already do, but, you know, I think that they should provide older adults a free digital literacy class at one of our local community centers. You know, however, it is great to hear that although there are still challenges for this group, there are definitely practical solutions to help them overcome these challenges.
Yeah. So you mentioned the digital literacy class. Do you think community centers have a duty to older adults to almost push them to go out and make social connections?
You know, I kind of do. I feel like with these populations who are older, they've already given so much back to us that I feel like we need to give back to them. And being an exercise science student, we talk about how to get people to be healthier, how to get people to exercise. And I feel like one of the biggest steps we could do is, you know, move these older people towards, you don't have to necessarily exercise all the time to be healthy, still need to exercise to be healthy, but, you know, learn how to use these computers, learn how to use these phones properly, and really find out how to connect with your family, with your friends, with other people, and, you know, meet new people. You know, I really expect and hope that places like our community centers are really going out of their way to find older adults that they think are at risk, especially for mental health disorders. Make sure that they catch these things before they start to spiral and make sure that they feel included.
I agree. It's crucial that we continue to raise awareness and support initiatives that promote social connection and well-being among older adults. I'm very familiar, having worked in Pittsburgh as a personal trainer in one of the Jewish community centers there, how closely knit those types of centers really bring people together. I mean, people have spent almost their entire day there, and there's a lot more connection there that's both community, faith-based. What's the locality? There's a lot of things that we can do to kind of provide a means for people to get together. And we talk a lot in the classes about exercise science being biomechanical psychosocial. I think that phrase fits very well with this whole conversation of social connectedness, that we can't just treat social connectedness as the social piece, right? There's psychological issues. There's benefits to being socially connected that make one healthier, but there are also a lot of psychological barriers that prevent people from getting more socially connected. I mean, you think of hearing loss being an issue there. People with memory loss are going to be a little less likely to interact with their old friends in their communities. Parkinson's disease can also, or Alzheimer's, any other kind of physical disease that we might have as we age, or as a product of aging, could lead to us tending to isolate ourselves from other people. People that have strokes are more likely to be more socially isolated than people who have not. And in our mechanical abilities, our ability to move, our mobility, ability to drive, even the ability to cook and make food. I mean, a lot of senior women love to bake, and that's one of the things I always loved about church groups, when the senior women, man, they made the best baked goods every week. And whenever there was a get together or something, there was always going to be some good stuff. But once you kind of lose that ability to kind of do that functionally, you feel a little bit more isolated. You're a little less likely to engage because, well, everybody expects me to bring cookies and I just can't bake them anymore. And so it is that biological, the mechanical, the psychological, and the social pieces that we have to consider. And in addition, we take a very proactive approach here on the Aging Well podcast. So I hope that we're trying to help people of all ages to find and maintain social connections. If anything you would add to that?
Well, I working at a physical therapy clinic for a while now, I really see the firsthand side of, you know, we have people that come into the clinic and they love bringing us cookies. They love bringing us brownies. They love bringing us everything. We love it too. And I feel like it is just another way that we can connect with the older people that maybe we only see them once a week. Maybe we only see them once every other week, but it still gives them something to look forward to. It still gives us something to look forward to.
I always enjoyed when I was doing personal training way back in the day. And I mean, way back in the day, any of these older adults that I might be talking about, there's no way they're still around. But it was such a social event for them coming to the gym. It was more about the social interaction than it was really about the physical benefits of getting the exercise. I mean, the women, they'd come, you know, they're all dressed in their exercise clothes and they just come, they have stories to tell. It was just a really great environment. Whereas a lot of us, when we're younger, we just kind of take advantage of the gym. I'm very antisocial at the gym. And part of that is the fact that I was a trainer for so many years and I feel this need to kind of watch everybody and, oh, I got to go over and correct their form. And I want to just get my workout done and get out. And so I very easily kind of isolate myself from that. So as I age, and I'm definitely aging, for me going forward, my social interactions are going to have to be found in other places. I mentioned how I could feel somewhat socially isolated at work, but fortunately I have the students to kind of interact with. But at some point, retirement's going to come. And I retire, now I'm going to be taking myself away from having my entire work week being around people and having, you know, albeit they're somewhat forced to interact with me, right, as a professor, but I'm going to be moving into a much more isolated situation. So even for myself, I have to begin to think about preparing myself for that. What am I going to be doing to remain engaged in my communities and continue to develop communities as I age? And I think for me, a lot of it's going to be, I'm not going to be able to stop teaching. I might have to start volunteering. I feel like this podcast is a little bit more of a social interaction for me as well. I mean, having the opportunity to, you know, sit here and interview you here today, while you're interviewing me technically, right? So, but having guests on there, and that gives me some level of social connectedness. But for me as well, Facebook has been a really important source of connectedness because I'm remaining connected with friends that I've made over the last 40, 50 years. And you're more connected. You know when somebody's not doing well, you know when somebody's parent dies or their kid graduates from college. I just got messages today from a friend of mine from high school, Ted, his nephew, who his brother also went to school with me. He's a few years behind me. His nephew, Jack, is in the semifinals of Pennsylvania State Tournament for wrestling. So it's like, I wouldn't know that if I didn't have some of that level of connectedness. So I think it is very important for us to find the ways that we individually can maintain that social connection.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. And me, you know, I'm moving to North Carolina soon and I'm kind of leaving behind all of my family that I have over here, but I feel like I still need to stay engaged with them. And, you know, I can't just totally tune out. And most of that is going to come through Facebook. Most of that is going to come through other social media apps. And I just feel like I, as an exercise science student who also knows the social aspect of it, like we talked about, I feel like I also have a duty to keeping people healthy.
Yeah, we do. Hopefully I am teaching you all that it is a duty. It's not just a vocation for many of you. And I do believe that from the majority of your classmates, my students, that they're in exercise science because they see it as a lifestyle. They see that biomechanical psychosocial piece. And it's not just about the fact that I like exercising and this is going to make some money for me. It's having that impact on my communities. And hopefully, you know, we can make some changes because I do think our communities need to make some considerable changes if we're going to continue to age well.
Yeah. And especially because this population that's aging is our biggest population. So we really need to make sure we keep them around and healthy around as long as possible, because we're going to be losing all of our, you know, we're going to be losing the biggest population that we've ever had. So,
yeah. And there's a big difference between simply keeping the aging adult around and keeping them around healthy. And, you know, we talk a fair amount on here about the different ages. First age being the age of dependence, second age being the kind of age of independence as you're building up your careers and your families and so on, third age being the retirement years, and then fourth age being the age of kind of decline and decrepitude toward death. We want to keep that fourth age as short as possible. And so third age needs to be people being financially secure, but also being physically capable of doing things and remaining active and being able to be engaged socially with their communities. And so what do we do to build communities that are inherently engaging for the population of all ages?
Well, I feel like we need to not be reactive. We need to address these problems before they start and identify that there are problems and not just sweep everything under the rug and say, oh, well, we'll figure it out eventually. And part of that is what we learn in exercise science of how do we stop these problems and these things from happening before they happen, rather than how do we fix them after they've happened.
Well, thank you for joining me. This has been a fascinating conversation. It's been a unique conversation to have one of my former students on. I mean, Corbin's one of my former students, but he's so far distanced from having graduated that it's not quite the same. And Noah, you're going to be graduating soon and you are still young. So look forward to the opportunities and age well.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you benefited from today's podcast, and until next time, keep aging well.